Two men in suits and overcoats walk along a nighttime pavement. Black and white photos of Ron and Reg Cray. A poster of Kitchener in front of a Union Jack with "Your Country Needs You" written underneath. Rupert Penry Jones, Phil Davis, Steve Pemberton. The Cray twins in an old TV interview. Ron and Reg wearing boxing gloves and posing for a picture with their mum. Amateur boxers spar in a ring. A London nightclub. A street sign, Valence Road. Reg Cray's name in a boxing programme. An East End street. Tower Bridge. Smartly dressed men walk through a tunnel. Whitechapel on a street map. A group of men eat in a smart function room. Written by Ben Court and Caroline Ipp. Produced by Graham Marmion. Directed by David Evans. D.I. Chandler, D.S. Miles, D.C. Kent, D.C. McCormack and Edward Buchan sit at a table at the back of the function room. Kent holds a bottle of wine out to Chandler.
So you want some, sir? It's free.
This is great. As soon as you finish one, they replace it with another bottle.
Didn't know they made wine in Malta.
So, have you prepared a speech?
Well, I know what I'm going to say.
Are you going to mention any names?
A few.
Will you be making reference to my own part in the investigation?
Hey, I don't even know what you're doing here.
I'm a guest.
Well, this is for the police, for detectives. You're not a detective. You have no place at this table.
I'm as much a detective as any of you. I can solve any crime I put my mind to.
In the comfort of your armchair, yeah.
Gentlemen, please, let's not make a long night feel even longer.
Fair-haired, 40-ish Chandler stands up and walks away. In a busy London pub, a young, dark-haired guy is sitting at the bar.
Hey, what'd you call a bird? Why would you call a bird with bigger bacon on her face? Kath.
The young man swigs from his bottle of beer. A handwritten note mentions the Grave Maurice pub. On a street, a middle-aged man in an overcoat hands a dark object to another man. The two men walk off in opposite directions. Chandler's at the function room bar as Commander Anderson walks up behind him.
You should know that despite appearances, I still have your best interests at heart.
I understand the politics.
You still enjoying your time as DI?
I'd enjoy the challenges, if there were any.
Seriously, Joe, you're satisfied being a detective?
There's nothing to do. A few domestics, Saturday night kebab shop stabbings. That's been it since the Ripper. I'm inert.
Another big case will find you soon. Be ready.
I will be, sir.
Anderson, wearing his full uniform, walks away. Men in black suits and overcoats walk down a narrow corridor. Dan, the young guy from the bar, is having a pee in the pub toilet. He swills his hands in the sink. The men in suits come into the toilets, and Dan looks up nervously.
Did I say something wrong? I was only a joke. I didn't mean anything by it.
Never did think your face fit.
They grab his collar and produce a knife. At the police event, Anderson talks into a mic.
And no one has worked harder than DCI Kazanov's team. Thanks to them, the capital is safer now than it has ever been.
Dan's face is cut.
It gives me great pleasure to award our highest commendation to DCI Kazanov.
Chandler claps as tall, dark-haired Kazanov stands up from another table. Kazanov, who wears a sharp black suit and has slicked back hair, steps onto the stage and receives a framed commendation. Dan lies face down in a huge pool of blood in the pub toilet. Whitechapel. While the award ceremony continues, Chandler steps over to Kazanov's table.
DCI Christopher Gross has, after many years of dedicated and valuable service, chosen to retire.
I just wanted to say congratulations. What you've done is impressive. It's truly amazing.
Thank you. DCI Christopher D.I. Chandler.
Oh, you've heard of me.
You're the man who failed to catch the Ripper. But out of interest, I reviewed your investigation. I couldn't fault anything you did.
Thank you. That means a lot.
It's a bloody shame he got away.
An award for bravery. Detective Sergeant Ray Miles.
Go, Sergeant.
Go on, Sarge!
Miles, in his mid-50s, stands up and steps onto the stage.
I'll keep it short and sweet. I got stabbed in the liver by the Ripper, and I nearly bled to death. I'm standing here now because my DI stayed with me and saved my life. He could have given chase, made the arrest, and solved the case of a lifetime, but he didn't. He stayed by my side. And for that, we're punished. Stuck right at the back on the last table next to the bins. See, I can't help thinking, if he'd have let me die and made the arrest and gone on to catch the Ripper, he'd be sitting at the front here, where the champagne is. Since when is saving your sergeant's life the wrong decision? So thanks for this, but no thanks. And now I just need to catch a bus back to my table.
Miles steps down from the podium. Casanova stands up and applauds. Miles' colleagues on his table also applaud, and the whole room joins in. Day. A body dressed in blue floats down the River Thames. A police car parks up in the station car park. Chandler walks into the incident room where Miles, Kent and McCormack are sitting at their desks. He steps over to Kent's desk.
Was anything called in overnight?
Nothing, sorry.
Miles reads a paper. McCormack looks hungover.
Have you got any work to be getting on with?
We're all up to date. You should learn to enjoy these moments. Take it easy.
He picks up files.
Yep. Review the files. Have a look around, see if there's any tidying to be done.
You want us to look busy for the sake of it?
I want you to be ready for action. Sharp.
Chandler walks into his office and sits at his desk. He places his warrant card, wallet, phone and pen on his desk and takes off his watch. In the outer office, DC Kent does the same. Both men arrange their items neatly on their desks. Chandler looks around at a loose end. A small boat cruises along the Thames and a man points at a body washed up on the bank. The phone rings on Chandler's desk.
Guy Chandler. I see. No. We'll be right there. We've got one!
Or domestic?
No, it's in the river.
Not a suicide.
Bona fide whodunit.
The team get up from their desks. As they walk along the riverbank, Chandler steps up alongside Miles.
Miles. I just wanted to thank you for what you said last night.
Well, it's just the truth as I see it.
Yes, but I didn't know you felt so strongly about what happened. About me.
It was only a speech after one too many. Doesn't mean we're engaged or anything.
Hello. Come in. Make yourself at home.
So, what have you got for me?
Something gruesome, I'm afraid.
Don't worry. Nothing bothers me now.
He's been in the water for a good couple of weeks. The fish have been at him. Male, 60 plus. Large, penetrating wound in the chest. A couple of ribs missing. The heart has been cut to pieces. Very little left. And here, the skull has been cracked open quite violently. Large portion missing. And the brain, well, it's gone. I'm going to need a bit longer with this one. Can't make any promises, given the body's condition.
Miles, are you okay?
I need some air.
Miles stumbles out of the scene of crime tent. A sudden image of Ronnie Cray, a crane, the river, a knees up in a restaurant. Miles gasps for breath and drops to his knees. Images of a dingy flat and the Crays being interviewed. Chandler and Kent rush over to help Miles.
We now know that DS Miles suffered a panic attack. Probably caused by post-traumatic stress because of the stabbing. And we can, as a team, help him back on his feet and by showing understanding and compassion.
Miles comes in.
Stabs in your desk.
Yeah, bloody hyenas.
Yeah, you're a bit nancy, boy.
Oh, well, carry on. Don't let me stop it.
Right. Our first task is to identify the victim. Now, we don't know if he's on the DNA database yet, and he's been in the water too long for us to get any prints.
What about dental records?
The victim had no teeth. He wore dentures.
I'll check missing persons.
Good. In the meantime...
A shoe.
We can use this. The handmade. The cobbler would have used something called a last, which is basically the shape of the man's foot carved in wood. Each last is unique. We find this man's last, it'll give us his name.
Smith.
The cobbler's called Smith. Now, he's retired, but his lasts were sold to the landlord of the Grave Maurice pub off the Whitechapel Road.
Aerial views of London by night. Chandler and Miles walk down the street towards the Grave Maurice pub.
Are you sure you don't want to do this with a couple of uniforms?
It's just a pub, Miles.
Chandler steps up to the door, but Miles hesitates.
Aren't you coming in?
Oh, you go on. I'll wait outside.
Deep breaths.
Yeah, I know. I'm fine.
Clean-cut, smartly dressed Chandler walks into the pub, and the rough-and-ready drinkers look at him. The shaven-headed barman steps up to the bar.
What do you want, officer?
The eye, Chandler. I want to see the lasts you bought from Mr. Smith.
The barman nods towards another room.
Help yourself.
Chandler strolls into the room.
What did you do that for?
A burly regular takes out his mobile phone. A woman helps a man on with an immaculate white shirt.
And now it has come to us. Stand alone.
Chandler checks through a rack full of wooden lasts.
Probably before God, but conscious that we serve an unfolding purpose.
The man getting dressed brushes the sleeves of his pinstriped suit and smokes a cigarette. Standing outside the pub, Miles looks around nervously. He peers through the frosted glass window pane. Chandler tries to slide each wooden foot-shaped last into the shoe the body was wearing. The barman and regular watch him coldly. The man getting dressed slides his foot into an elegant leather shoe using a long shoehorn.
Native land against the invasion by which it is threatened.
The man in the suit slides a gleaming stiletto into the sleeve of his jacket. A shadowy figure walks up a street. Chandler slots one of the lasts into the shoe and smiles, then comes out of the pub to Miles. The shadowy figure walks towards the Grave Maurice, then stops as Miles and Chandler walk away. The figure holds the stiletto in his hand. Chandler comes into the incident room to find a workman tending the leaking ceiling.
What the hell happened here?
Some young offenders blocked the sinks upstairs.
Sorry. Come on, mate.
The workman leaves and a man in an overcoat comes in.
D.C. Mansell.
D.I. Chandler. Sorry about the mess, sir. Welcome to the team.
Finley Mansell, king of the canteen. Good to see you.
I saved you the desk next to mine. How you doing?
We'll have a right laugh.
Right, well, we have a murder, so you're going to have to hit the ground running today.
That's what I'm here for. It's rock and roll.
Wait.
Cheers.
Miles throws Mansell a tie, the incident board.
The name on the last was Lenny Cobb. Now, 2 months ago, Lenny vanished from open prison, where he was serving 18 months for credit card fraud. He was a model prisoner and well-liked generally, which begs the question, why was he murdered so brutally?
Excuse me, sir, there's a man downstairs who reckons he knows everything about the murder.
Come on, Miles.
Fitzgerald, now in uniform, looks at the others.
What's the matter with you? Now I'm in uniform, you don't know me anymore. I'm a ghost.
Sneering, Fitzgerald walks out. A cheap TV programme.
Gangland grins! Cash! Stash! Poi a mesh!
Buchan.
Welcome to the East End.
In fact, they grew up on these.
I'll turn this crap off.
I haven't got to the relevant bit yet.
The Grey Twins helped Frank, the mad axeman Mitchell, escape from prison and hid him away in this very flat. Mitchell became a liability, and like all problems, they solved it with violence. They sent men to kill him and cut the bullets from his heart and his brain. Then the body of Frank Mitchell.
All right, that's enough. Show's over. Lenny Cobb was part of the Grey's firm. He escaped from prison and then he winds up dead. It's not a coincidence. His death is a message.
What message would that be?
An old score, a tribute, who knows? But you know what we've got here, don't you? Another copycat. A crazed Cray fan. They have a huge following, you know. The Crays were the original British gangsters. They made violence profitable, They invented the firm. That whole diamond geezer aesthetic, the sharp suits, the flash jewelry, the cars, all came from them. They were the Robin Hoods of the East End, the rock stars of murder.
That's enough.
All that proves is you once had hair. Don't make you a detective.
The documentary isn't perfect.
I was asked to do it after Ronnie's death in 95, but it wasn't the serious analysis I was promised. However, it will help you to predict what the killer will do next.
There are at least two more deaths to come, if I'm right. Which, of course, I am.
He puts on his hat.
Again?
He leaves Chandler with the video. Chandler and Miles walk downstairs.
Why'd you humour him like that? It only encourages him. He's like a big kid wanting attention. Look at me, Mummy.
He was right about the Ripper.
So what? He's not a copper. Bloody amateur.
I just don't want to say anything that'll send you off in the wrong direction.
Was he shot?
Well, he was dead before he hit the water. The injuries to his chest could have been caused by a blade or a boat's propeller. I'd love to give you more, but the crab's about all the evidence.
Well, there's nothing here to support Buchan's copycat theory.
Not yet. There's something about this murder that doesn't feel right. I'm going to talk to Lenny's family. See if I can get a sense of his world and who might want to kill him.
Good. You do that.
And what are you going to do?
I'm going to see a doctor.
Miles strides out. Night's fallen and Chandler walks to a block of flats. Miles is in A&E.
I wonder if you can help me. I'm looking for woundings. Not your usual Friday night stuff.
I know exactly what you mean. They started coming in 6 months ago. But they won't involve the police. The victims won't give names. They won't say who did it. They just want to be stitched up and that's it, gone.
So we won't have heard about.
These are very nasty injuries, very deliberate, very old school. The last lad was found on the floor of a pub toilet. They had to put the remains of his face in a bucket.
Chandler's having a cup of tea in an elderly lady's living room.
And he had no reason to escape from prison. He liked it there.
He liked it?
My brother was institutionalised. Couldn't look after himself when he was out. Couldn't cope. In prison. He had respect. They wanted to hear him talk about Ron and Reg. Lenny got to be part of the legend.
Ron and Reg Gray?
Do you know any other Ron and Regs?
Chandler ponders.
I don't think Lenny escaped. I think someone took him.
Dan's in a hospital bed, his face totally covered in bandages.
Hello, Dan. I'm Detective Sergeant Miles.
I don't want to talk to you. Can you go away, please?
Did you really have that coming to you?
Go. I'll have you thrown out.
You probably don't realise it, but you were lucky. My advice, get better. And get the hell out of Whitechapel.
Miles walks down the hospital corridor, the fluorescent lights flickering on and off above him. The workmen are fixing the incident room ceiling as Chandler comes in. McCormick, Kent and Mansell are sitting at their desks.
Where's Miles?
He's called in sick.
He's lost his bottle.
Let's not write the man off just because he's having a bad week.
D.I. Chandler.
D.C.I. Casanova. What are you doing here?
We have been tasked to take over the inquiry into the murder of Leonard Kopp.
On what grounds?
That it's a gang-related killing. D.S. Ray Miles has identified a pattern of violence and has found links to organised crime which require further investigation. He passed his findings on to us.
It's news to me. Oh, fine, help yourself. Take it all.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to step on your toes. I'll keep you informed.
Chandler marches out. Later, he parks his car outside Miles' suburban house. Miles is in his back garden, feeding carp in his pond. Chandler strides towards him.
Don't start shouting, you'll scare the fish.
I've a good mind to push you in there.
Sit down and take some food.
I don't want to feed fish, I want an explanation.
Sit down, sir.
Chandler grudgingly sits beside him.
I know you don't like what I did, and for that I'm sorry, but it had to be done.
It was shaping up to be a really interesting case, and you just gave it away.
Some cases can be too interesting.
What the hell does that mean?
Let's go to the pub.
What? It's 2 in the afternoon.
Well, they'll all be there then, won't they?
Miles walks into the grave Maurice, followed by Chandler. They sit together at the bar.
Two pints of bitter, please.
Actually, I'll have...
No, two pints of bitter. Just look around and tell me what you see.
Tough crowd for the lunchtime stripper.
You're looking, but you're not seeing. Try again.
Chandler looks around and notices an elderly man with a broken nose. Another man has a bite scar on his cheek. Another man has scars on the sides of his mouth like a grotesque smile.
What the hell did they do to that man with the thing?
They rammed a cutlass into his mouth and carved. They call it a Chelsea smile.
Jesus.
As soon as I saw Lenny Cobb's body, I thought someone might be copying the craze. And when I discovered the wound is, I knew it for certain.
Well, if you thought it was a copycat, why did you disagree with Buckham? Why didn't you tell me what you were thinking?
Look, the craze owned London. They built up a wall of fear using violence and madness, and nobody could touch them. They had the police in their pockets, they blackmailed politicians, they fixed their juries, their name, their reputation was the law. Now, if someone's using the Cray name again, copying what they did, the last thing I needed was Buckham sticking his oar in and getting you involved.
I do wish you wouldn't underestimate me. I can handle myself, you know. I can!
In the station.
Keep him busy. Good.
Hello?
Yeah, it's me. How you doing? Look. This is how I do the phones in Crime Watch.
Mansell looks serious.
D.I. Chandler.
Meet you at the back of the snooker hall.
Back of which snooker hall?
The Regency. There's been a stabbing.
Who is this?
Look. Now I'm writing down notes like someone's called a tippy.
Chandler sees Mansell larking about.
That's good.
Mansell!
It's not funny!
What? What have I done?
The phone!
Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but you did say to make yourself look busy.
Who are you talking to?
McCormack, sir.
You didn't call me just now?
No, sir.
Oh, sorry. It appears I've just had an anonymous tip about a bayoneting at a snooker hall.
A bayoneting? Give it to Cazenove.
I will, but I want to go and have a look first.
Why?
Because if someone's copying the craze, then this case will be huge.
You haven't listened to a word I've said, have you? This is dangerous.
Fine, I'll take Kent.
If somebody is copying the craze, that would just make them some kind of pathetic wannabe, wouldn't it? They don't need to be scared. We need to give them a slap, tell them how to behave.
A slap, yeah, that'll do it.
Miles slams down a folder and follows them out. Chandler, Kent and Miles come into the snooker hall, and Chandler leans down to the grave Maurice barman, who's pinned to a snooker table with a knife through his hand.
Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah, I was playing, and I slipped.
You slipped?
Yeah, then I feel silly, eh?
Who put the knife through your hand?
What knife?
Chandler turns round to Miles.
That's the barman.
The grave Maurice, yeah, I know.
Who's he?
Stephen Dukes. His father runs the family firm, so if you're going to talk to him, you behave yourself.
I'm the police. I'll talk to him however I want.
Chandler walks across the hall.
D.I. Chandler.
Chandler holds out his hand, but Stocky Dukes just stares at him.
Were you here when this man was attacked? Please don't ignore me, Mr. Dukes. It makes me think you have something to hide.
You want to talk to me? Arrest me. Otherwise, get off my premises.
Chandler turns and walks back to Miles and Kent.
I'm going to have a look around.
He opens the back door and steps out onto a shabby yard behind the hall. A middle-aged man wearing a dark blue suit and purple shirt swaggers over to him.
I'm the one who called you.
Do you have a name yet?
Me and me was the right decision.
Do you work for Stephen Dukes?
I would call him my colleague rather than my boss.
Et tu, Brute?
Julius Caesar. That's very good. They're not far from the truth. The violence is getting out of control. It's bad for business. needs to be reined in.
Why not go to the organized crime division?
Because somebody in high places thinks you're the man for the job.
Give me something on Dukes, then.
Be a detective. I'll help you where I can.
Chandler and Kent at the station.
You think Jukes is the copycat?
I think the Kray legend is very potent, and a clever man could use it to consolidate his power. I want you to find out everything you can on Stephen Dukes. Known associates, arrests, warrants, that kind of thing.
Okay. I'll bring you everything I can find on Dukes first thing tomorrow.
Watch your back.
Chandler polishes his shoes and turns on Buchan's video.
The legend of the Krays continues to inspire fear and admiration in London's infamous East End.
Stephen Dukes is part of a notorious crime family. He must have grown up idolising the Krays, and now he's using the legend to build his own empire.
Does he wear Italian suits? Monogram shirt?
Not when he was standing in a snooker hall, no.
Ah, but don't you see, if he were the copycat, he would. The copycat went to great trouble to recreate the exact details of Frank Mitchell's death. Lenny Cobb was taken from Dartmoor Prison, just like Mitchell, and his injuries were, tragically, just like Mitchell's. Anyone who cares enough about those details would at the very least wear the suit.
This is about power and fear, not fancy dress.
But it's not about a pretense or an act. It's about being a Kray. I don't think it can be Duke.
Duke has motive. He has opportunity. And he inspires enough fear to ensure silence. My instinct tells me that he's the one.
There are two more iconic murders, two more victims to come. The shooting of George Cornell in The Blind Beggar and the slaughter of Jack the Hat McVitie. If I'm right, then your killer is far more dangerous than a mere villain on the make.
Kent rides his scooter along a city street. In the station, Chandler holds files and talks on his mobile.
Files. Organised crime. I've arrested a man for the murder of Lenny Cobb. And we've been invited to see the interview.
Well, can't cope on his own.
No, I think Castle's just trying to reconsider, that's all. Yeah, all right. I'll see you later.
A copper knocks the files out of his hand.
Stop right there, Constable! I said stop!
Chandler yells from the stairs and everyone around the reception desk looks up at him. The policeman who knocked the files out of his hand leans on the desk and looks round. Chandler quietly walks back up the stairs. Miles and Chandler walk into the organised crime division and Cazenove shakes their hands.
So glad you could come. No hard feelings, I hope.
None at all.
D.S. Miles, you're the man who thought this murder was gang-related. It's a hugely exciting idea, and we looked into it as far as we could, but quite honestly, it's all a bit of a fantasy.
Well, I imagined the murder, and then I imagined a bloke with a stiletto knife through his head.
There's a lot of circumstantial evidence to support the theory.
This murder isn't part of a big crime ring with villains resurrected from the swinging 60s. It's just the senseless killing of a pensioner.
Who's the suspect?
Miles and Chandler watch a video feed as a youth in a baseball cap is brought into an interview room.
Paul Gedding, 15th of January, 1983.
You know him?
Paul's a little chancer. Into jargoons and tweedles, nothing big.
What language are you speaking?
Selling people fake jewellery and the like, small-time cons.
Is he violent?
No. Bloody coward. He's only survived this long because he's fast on his feet. I'll say this, though. He could be bought for anything.
Please state your full name and date of birth.
Paul Gadding, 15th of January, 1983.
Can you tell us why you're here today, Paul?
I killed an old man.
Do you know his name?
Yeah. Lenny. Lenny Cobb.
Go ahead, Paul. You're in time.
Well, I was on my way home from the pub, and next thing I felt something in my pocket, and I turned round, and there's this old man trying to steal my credit cards. So we had a little fight, and I stabbed him in the chest once, and he died. And we were down by the river, so I pushed him in, and I threw the knife in too. And I can't live with what I've done, and that's why I wanted to confess.
If Paul Gedding was paid to confess, I want to know who paid him.
But it doesn't matter. Organised crime get the result they want. End of story as far as they're concerned.
Any chance of getting Sandra Wheat?
So, you owned the snooker hall in 2008, and then you sold it.
I didn't sell it. I gave it away.
To Stephen Dukes?
Yes, to him.
Why did you do that?
Because I'm not stupid.
The white-haired copy shop owner sits down behind his desk and Kent writes in his notebook. Kent steps out of the copy shop and saunters up the road towards his parked scooter. He glances around the empty street. Kent unlocks his saddle, lifts it up, and reaches into the storage compartment. Suddenly, a figure wearing a dark suit, overcoat, and leather gloves grabs him and slams him against a metal shutter.
You should watch your mouth.
Another figure, identically dressed, pulls a long knife and slashes Kent's back. Miles and Chandler find Kent in hospital.
Kent, was it Stephen Dukes?
I don't know.
How bad is it?
We won't know until the surgeon can assess the damage done to the sciatic nerve.
I've been striked. Deep slashes to the buttocks.
Come on.
The villains like it because it's a nasty injury and you can't be done for attempted murder.
Lying on his front, Kent is wheeled away on a gurney.
This is all my fault.
Chandler paces anxiously.
I underestimated Dukes. I sent Kent out on his own.
Can't blame yourself for the way they behave.
Kent's a good policeman. He's loyal, he's diligent. Then his whole future's uncertain. Dukes has sealed his fate.
Sealed his fate? Do you imagine this is a fair fight where the best man wins? This is a scrap where the meanest, hardest bastard wins.
You don't know what I'm capable of.
Chandler strides off.
This is the pattern. Lenny Cobb, taken from open prison, murdered, extensive damage to head and chest, dumped in the Thames. Frank, the mad axeman Mitchell. Escaped from prison, shot in the head and chest, bullets dug out of the body, and dumped in the sea off New Haven, 1966. Sol Cross, the barman who had a stiletto blade put through his hand on a snooker table. This man was bayoneted to a table at the Regal Billiard Hall. Dan Street had his face cut off in a pub toilet, just like Joe the Boxer, 1966. Now, the men who attacked these people in 66 were Ronnie and Reggie Cray. Now, DCI Casanova doesn't agree with me, but I believe the man who attacked these people and striped Kent wants to be just like the Crays. He wants the criminal empire, the power, the respect, and I think that man is Stephen Dukes. All we have to do now is prove it. Now, Dukes is not afraid to target police, and he may already have allies in this station. So, I'm giving you a choice. This one's a matter of conscience. You do what's right for you and your families.
Sorry, not me.
I'm out, sir.
Well, I'm in,
says Mansell.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, someone's got to hold your hand.
McCormack and Miles.
Just us, then. Probably safer that way. Right, from now on, no one goes out on their own, eh? You'd find different ways to travel to work. Just change your routines. We need to know everything there is about Stephen Dukes. And I want a thorough check done on Paul Gedding, who confessed to the murder of Lenny Cobb. If he was paid off, the money might lead back to Dukes.
I'll take that one, boss.
Good man.
In his study, Edward Buchan looks through court documents from the Crays trial. He reads a page of names and finds Cobb, Leonard. Buchan takes a book called Slasher from a small revolving bookcase and flicks through the pages. He looks up, tensely. Chandler steps into the foyer of an elegant gentleman's club, and the concierge takes his coat. He walks up a staircase and steps into a lounge, furnished with plush red leather couches and oil paintings on the walls. Commander Anderson sits nursing a brandy in a leather armchair by the fireplace. He stands as Chandler walks over.
Joe, would you like a drink?
No, thank you.
Always on duty, eh?
Why am I here?
Friendly word in your ear. About your sergeant.
Miles.
What do you know about his background?
Not much. East End born and bred. Family have been there for generations.
Ask him about his father. Ask him about Freddy the Dip.
Freddy the Dip? You are joking.
You need to know who you're dealing with.
The station.
You were right about Paul Gedding.
He was paid to confess.
Well, his mum's had her mortgage paid off, and Paul's got $5,000 in the bank. His family are saying it's premium bonds, but they can't prove it.
Miles walks out to McCormack and Mansell.
Hey, listen, lads. Miles. Paul Gedding, Benton, I've got a bank to
rise. Chandler watches him through his office window and rubs his brow anxiously. An old man sits outside a pub and lights a cigarette with a skull and crossbones Zippo lighter. Buchan walks over to him.
Slasher Danford. Good to see you again.
Hello, Ed. You making another documentary?
No, this is a private matter. One of considerable importance to you. You gave compelling evidence about the murder of Jack the Hat McVitie. It caused a stir in court and made the front pages of the evening papers.
How about that game? I'm a granddad now.
You can't escape the past. Lenny Cobb testified against Ronnie and Reggie Cray. He gave evidence that implicated them in the disposal of Frank Mitchell's body, and he was killed in exactly the same way, as punishment, revenge.
Ed, I like you, but you're talking bollocks.
Someone is copying these iconic murders, and I think you will be the next victim.
Look, I wasn't scared of them then. I'm hardly likely to be scared now, am I? Nice seeing you, Ed.
Chandler and Miles drop a file on Cazenove's desk.
This is what we have so far on Paul Geddy.
They stand in front of the desk and watch him read.
Can you trace where the money came from?
Nope. It's all been done in cash.
We can't prove it, but it doesn't look good.
I was right about you. You are a great detective. And you have saved me and my team a shitload of embarrassment.
It was Miles, actually.
So, you still think this is the work of a crazed tribute act?
I'm working on a theory.
You're chasing phantoms again.
I nearly caught one before.
Chandler and Miles leave the office. They walk out of the station and across the forecourt. Cazenove stands in his office, staring at a window. In the reflection, he sees one of his team come in.
Thanks for coming, Chris.
What can I do for you, sir?
Paul Gedding.
Yes, sir?
D.I. Chandler has just informed me that Mr. Gedding was paid to confess.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, sir.
Cazenove steps over to a table, picks up his framed commendation and stares at it.
You see, what really bothers me about something like this is that it makes us all look incompetent.
He smashes the commendation into Chris's face. Cazenove straightens up and adjusts his tie.
Next time, do your job properly.
It's not Jukes. It's not about power or money or empire building. The motive is revenge. The victims are being chosen from those who gave evidence against the Cray twins, and they will be killed in the manner of their testament.
So who do you think will be next?
Slasher Danford. He testified about the death of Jack the Hat McVitie, and he's like McVitie in many ways. I tried to warn him, but he's refused to run or seek protection. I am a real detective, in my heart, in my bones, and I do not need a warrant card to prove it.
Thanks for the tip. We really appreciate it.
Don't just humor me, Joe. You must talk to Slasher. I can't have his death on my conscience.
Aerial views of the City of London. A quick image of Dukes. Outside the snooker hall, Dukes and some other men are chatting by a car. McCormack and Mansell watch from a balcony.
What's he doing? He's been outside for ages.
He's putting on a show.
For us. He knows we're here.
He knows.
Miles and Chandler come into the police station car park.
I want the rest of the team watching Stephen Dukes. And we'll go and talk to this slasher, Danford.
Oh, hang on. Buchan's come up with a theory based on his choice of victim. It don't make him right.
I know, but I owe him. It's one conversation.
He's not a detective. Imagine him trying to pass the physical.
Chandler's car's been vandalised.
I'm going to have a word.
No, leave it. Just get in the car.
You're going to let him boss you about?
Sticks and stones.
They're on the take. It makes me sick.
I know. Nothing worse.
A few uniformed officers watch them and laugh. Buchan sits in a pub and knocks back a glass of wine.
Slasher Danford will be murdered in the manner of Jack the Hat McVitie.
The I. Chandler.
It's me again. You looking for Slasher Danford?
Where is he?
Other side of the river. Outside St. Mary's Church. Green Rover. But you want to be quick.
Chandler puts his foot down.
The bridge is out in London.
Jack the Hat McVitie was lured to a fake party in a basement flat. Once he got there, Reggie tried to shoot him, but the gun jammed. McVitie begged for mercy, but Ronnie pinned his arms back and shouted at Reg to kill him.
Straighten his arm.
Reggie stabbed McVitie in the face, then in the stomach.
Don't stop me.
Then he was impaled through the throat to the floor.
Do him, Reg. Ball, kill him.
Chandler parks near a church.
That's him, isn't it?
A car.
Yeah, that's him in a car. That's Slasher. Well, he looks all right. Looks like he's waiting for someone. Let's go and have a word with him.
No, we wait and see who turns up. Was your father part of the Craze firm?
Miles looks away.
Who's been talking to you about me?
It doesn't matter. Whose side are you on?
My dad was known as Freddy the Dip because he could pick anyone's pocket. He used to do a turn where he'd take off Ronnie Craze's watch without him noticing, get it right off his wrist. Ronnie thought it was hilarious. He loved his tricks. He even brought old Ronnie home for tea one day. I always remember him sitting in the front room. Because I'd never seen anyone with eyes like Ronnie's before. They were like a shark's. Black and dead. Frightened the life out of me. Anyway, shortly after that, my dad skedaddled, buggered off. Don't know where or why. But me and my mum, we just had to get on with it.
You should have told me your father was part of the firm right at the start.
He wasn't part of the firm. He was nothing. He was an entertainer, like a jester. He wasn't treated any different to the dwarves and the donkeys that Ronnie used to bring to his parties.
Chandler stares at Miles.
Do not hug me.
I wasn't going to.
You were thinking about it.
In the pub, worried-looking Buchan sits at the bar and polishes off another glass of red wine. In the mirror behind the bar, he sees the man who spoke to Chandler outside the billiard hall come into the pub. Buchan tenses nervously as the man walks up to the bar and looks him square in the eyes.
Edward Buchan. I thought you'd appreciate a souvenir.
He places Slasher's Skull and Crossbones lighter on the bar and gives Buchan a snake-like smile, then walks out. Buchan picks up the lighter and stares at it, pale with fright. In Chandler's car.
D.I. Chandler.
They got to him, Joe. Slasher's dead.
No, he's not. I'm looking at him right now. And Dukes hasn't moved. He's still at the club with his crew.
After they killed Jack the Hat McVitie in 1967, Slasher dumped the body in South London.
Near London Bridge, by a church.
McVitie was propped up in his car, like he was still alive.
Chandler and Miles scramble out of the car and race towards the parked car. A sudden image of Jack McVitie as a mugshot and a body in a car. Slasher's lighter. The old car McVitie was left in, and the new car they're running towards. Slasher sits motionless in the driver's seat. Chandler pulls open the driver's door, and blood drips out onto the road. He pulls a blanket down from Slasher's chest to reveal several bloody stab wounds.
It wasn't Dukes.
It is Dukes. He just sent someone else to kill
him. No. That's not their way. The Craze were hands-on. That's why they were so feared. They did the killing.
Craze ordered the killing of Frank Mitchell, didn't they? I mean, it wasn't a hard and fast rule.
They killed Jack the Hat with their bare hands, I'm telling you. If Dukes didn't kill Slasher, he's not the copycat. The legend tells us that.
Then maybe Buchan's right and this is all about revenge. But that means that... Oh, my God. I mean, 28 members of the firm turned Queen's evidence at the trial.
who'd want them all dead now?
Well, I can only think of two people. The legend promises that one day Ron and Reg will return, resurrected.
I'm not afraid of ghosts.
He walks off.
I am.
Next time.
But I still don't see how you can use history to catch the craze.
Anything is possible. Let us detect.
ITFC audio description.